Welcome to the WFO Life Podcast. Buckle up for interviews, insights, and practical discussions, and the occasional intellectual oddity, all designed to help you master self, master craft, and accomplish any life mission.
And we're recording, Chris. Good evening. How are you tonight?
Doing great now that I got a little food in my body, I guess.
Yeah, you just got a late start tonight, huh?
No, I've been fasting, so I pretty much don't eat for about 16 hours. So I kind of eat a light lunch and dinner is the way it comes out. So it's funny because it's made me look forward to food in a different kind of way. It's like a treat, even if it's not anything special meal. It's like food, but I've gotten a sick charge out of the fasting thing. I had a 21 hour fast on Monday and felt pretty good and still worked out, and so I did like 12 or 13 Tuesday, and then I did like 15 Wednesday and Thursday. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, I like I said, I kind of get I've been getting a sick charge out of it, you know, because you get that ketone brain rush, I guess, that we talked about before.
Yeah, it sharpens everything and detoxes the body. So so you're doing a version of what they call peak intermittent fasting. So you're getting about a 15 to maybe 18 hour fast. It sounds like your average, which basically anything over about, most people about 14 to 15 hours starts to get you into ketosis, which means you're burning fat. So some of the other stuff I've read about fasting is that it sort of helps with what they call autophagy, which is sort of tearing down of damaged proteins or, you know, cells that maybe are precancerous or malformed in some way. So it's kind of this general detox, cleanup, repair, you know, housekeeping type of process. There's nothing wrong with fasting. So I've actually done a little bit of peak intermittent fasting myself in the past, and I'm actually going back to a little bit of that myself right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to, I think, test the threshold a little bit to see where the sweet spot is, where I still feel like I can work out and function, you know, before I get that meal. But I think, like we've talked about before, you know, as you do it more consistently, your body gets, I think, a little quicker about using fat for energy. And so you don't get as much headaches and hunger pains that you normally would get, I think. So
yeah, it doesn't. Because I've done what you're doing. I did that the better part of last year. And it's, after a while, it really seems pretty normal. It's just like, well, okay, I just don't eat until lunch. You know, it's just not a big deal, you know? Yeah. And your body sort of adapts to it. And the big trick with it, I think, is being careful how you break your fast. Mm-hmm. It's not a good idea to fast and then pound carbohydrates or whatever. That doesn't work very well. And I think we've covered that at some point on one of our topics. But that's the one little thing that, you know, jumping right in. It's okay to have good fats. It's good, okay to have protein. It may be even some, you know, vegetables, non-starchy, kind of low glycemic stuff, but you don't want to like go, all right, I fasted for 24 hours. Now I'm going to pound a, you know, bag of McDonald's fries or whatever, you know?
Well, the good thing about it, the way I've been breaking it has been at work. So I'm not at home. I don't have, you know, I only have access to, you know, what I brought or, you know, what's in the cafeteria. So like today I had maybe close to between a quarter and a half of a rotisserie chicken and just water. That was my fast break. So I was like, okay. And then I had a little bit of pasta for dinner with broccoli. So really the only carbs I got the entire day was probably, you know, a decent sized serving of the spaghetti, but I also ran in between the chicken and the spaghetti. So, you know, it's been good.
Well, the carbs are, for athletes, carbs can be okay immediately after exercise. You know, if you get too many hours out after exercise, then of course it's not as helpful. But yeah, for, you know, that's kind of a fine point about how the body works is, you know, everybody, oh, carbs bad. You know, it's like, well, they're not bad immediately after intense exercise. You know, the body, you know, it kind of restores the, you know, the glycogen, the sugar storage in the muscles pretty quickly, and it doesn't tend to spike insulin levels, which is what we're typically worried about. So
yeah, it's been a good experiment.
Yeah, I've been chasing a lot of things at work. You know, it's kind of busy. We just came off of flu season at our clinic, kind of gearing up you know, every you know, month, you know, this time of year for whatever's coming down the pipe next. I just I'm a medical director of a large construction company, and I got the call from the big boss, you know, saying, hey, what are we doing about coronavirus, you know?
Yeah.
And so I had to kind of, you know, kind of sit in on a meeting, just kind of go through what if scenarios. And it was actually a good thought process because, you know, there's at any given time, there's going to be something out there. I don't really think that coronavirus is going to be, you know, a game changer really, but I think that it's a good exercise to go through because periodically we have infectious disease things, you know, throughout the history of man that swept through the world and affected people greatly. And for a giant company with, you know, 3,000-4,000 employees that build things and run refineries and things like that, you know, you got to be really protective of your workforce. And yeah, you know, you don't want to go down for, you know, a week because, you know, we weren't paying attention and to what's going on as far as infectious disease.
Yeah, it seems like I know obviously if you pick it up directly, it is what it is, but I don't know if it has to do with the integrity of the virus, but I know they were saying on some medical pundit on the news that, you know, take that with a grain of salt, but they were saying that they predicted if it got hotter quicker an earlier summer, that I guess for some reason the structures of this virus, they think, is not going to be very, I guess, resistant to the just heat in the environment. So I don't know how that works, but
yeah, I mean, well, in, you know, radiation damages viruses and bacteria for that matter, and certain ones do better in, you know, different temperatures. And hopefully they're right. Hopefully whatever they've done, whatever they know about this virus, maybe it's a little more fragile, you know, with warm weather or with hotter temperatures. Yeah. So I hope that's the case. I mean, for most of the United States, it's not a, you know, I would say it's still a low, I mean, CDC considers it a high threat, but mm-hmm. but for, like, I know in our community in South Texas, it's really, there really are no cases here. So it's, you know, it's low probability that it's going to impact anybody right now.
Yeah.
But I think it's good that for people to have in mind, you know, what's going on and what to look for. And, you know, of course, healthcare workers are most likely to get it first.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, the only, I've read about it a little bit, and the only oddity that it seems like is making it concerning is that the incubation period, you know, kind of makes it where you're contagious before you have symptoms, which is not the case with a lot of those viruses. I guess you have some kind of symptoms, but I guess this one, it's like a very long incubation period where you become contagious, but you don't have symptoms. So I guess that's what's freaking people out, you know?
Yeah, that may be the case. And, and there's actually a lot of viruses that are that way, you know, that, you know, they're flu virus, you know, you can be contagious until, you know, you're fever free typically. And, but there's all kinds of variations and, you know, but I think bottom line for right now, for most people, it's, you know, if you travel a lot, maybe you're at higher risk, but, you know, for most people, hand washing and, you know, if I had one thing, it's like, for God's sakes, if you're sick, stay home. There are so many people that go to work and they're hacking up a lung and, I just have a 102 fever. I'm okay, you know? And it's like, come on. Go home, you know? It's like, I sometimes, one of my staff members get sick and they show up and I'm like, go home. We don't need to make people sick coming in here, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I know it's good for business, but.
last anecdote on the coronavirus. I saw a hilarious thing. It had a bunch of Asian folks sitting on standing on a street corner, and they were all wearing their masks, and one guy takes his mask off, and he like spits into a puddle and by the curb, and then a bus comes by and hits the puddle and sprays the entire. It says it's the world's. It was the world's shortest horror movie in Asia.
That is funny.
So anyway.
I've had the running joke in clinic as the patients come in, and I had this one guy came saying, "Yeah, I think I'm getting sick." And I was like, "Oh yes, what are your symptoms?" He tells me his symptoms, and I said, "Well, have you had any recent travel?" And he goes, "No, but I did have a corona last night." You know, stuff like that. Well, I think tonight I wanted to cover something. I don't think it's going to be a very long topic, but what I do is, for one of my daily kind of creative brainstorming processes, I typically write something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just kind of whatever's on my mind. And I know lately I've had a lot of stoic themes on my mind. Don't ask me why, but it's just, I just have those themes on my head. And so I tend to write on these, you know, these thoughts. And I had one that I wrote. I guess I'd like to just kind of go through it, and then let's just discuss it.
Sure.
And so I wanted to start with a quote. This is a Winston Churchill quote, which, by the way, for me, he's like one of the best, like, most quotable people. I just love his stuff. He probably robs it from everybody throughout history, but I just love his quotes. So Winston Churchill said, "Success is the ability to go from one failure to another with no less of enthusiasm." So when I read this, I thought that, you know, I've lived long enough to know that not everything works out as planned. We mm-hmm. win, we lose. Sometimes things go badly for an extended period of time. And sometimes, you know, life, you know, some people just have a lifetime of heartache and disappointment, and it weighs us down mentally, physically, and emotionally. And I got to thinking, what are we supposed to do about this? What is it we're supposed to gather from this? And I think that what Winston Churchill is saying here is that failures are not really they're not real. They're really part of the journey of life. And in the end, we all really don't leave with anything. I got to thinking, okay, what kind of failures have I had in my life? And I said, well, is it really a failure? I'm still here. And in the end, whether I lose my job, my money, my home, my possessions, my family, any number of things that we have in the world, no matter what, we all still leave with nothing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I was going to say, I had made some notes myself that were a lot of Stoic thoughts that I've had and read on. But as you outlined the beginning of that, it kind of reminded me, and I had it saved in one of our, I think, drives somewhere else, and I popped it up. But there's a poem by Rudyard Kipling who I've only maybe in the past 5 or 6 years really started to read some of his stuff. But he's got a line in his famous poem, If, that is really almost like a good life lesson in itself, just picking apart that poem. But there's one line from it that really reminded me of what you're saying. It said, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same. So,
that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this poem is stellar. I mean, it's just got a bunch of, you know, it's dripping with life lessons. But what you were saying is what that line says. It's like, if you can, you know, treat the highest of the high or the lowest of the low the same and put them in their proper context, then, I mean, that really will define who you are as a person, right? Because you're going to have, in this case, you're talking about, you know, dealing with a failure, dealing with adversity, but it's like you really should, you know, keep things in their proper context, because unless you just completely give up and go into a hole, anything that's negative, you know, in most cases is just temporary.
Is Kipling the same one that wrote The Man in the Arena? Is that the same one?
I'm not sure. But
my brother-in-law was on with us. He was an old West Point guy, and he could he can just recite it, the whole thing. But it's The Man in the Arena, dust on his face, all that kind of thing, and I'll have to look it up. Maybe I'll add.
Yeah, I'm very familiar. Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's better to try than try and fail than to never have tried at all.
I know a lot of times. Yeah, I know a lot of times it's. I think Teddy Roosevelt. I don't think he was the one who necessarily came up with it, but I know he referred to it because the kind of personality and the kind of, you know, I guess extreme Renaissance man that he was. I mean, that's there's actually a book that I was going to talk about later after we go through this called The Obstacle is the Way, and they talk about, you know, Teddy Roosevelt is a good example of what you're talking about, because he grew up kind of sickly, you know, and he was like little and weak,
right.
And you know, and his dad helped him essentially build whatever a gym or, you know, workout type room or setup was in those days. But he kind of promised his dad that he wasn't always going to be like that. And so I think that kind of made him who he was. You know, he dealt with all that adversity and that, you know, physical weakness, and he became like, you know, the God's gift to masculinity, you know, with all the things right. that he ended up doing. So anyway.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. I guess I don't know why I thought it was Kipling, but I found it as we're chatting here. Mm. The Man in the Arena. It does say Teddy Roosevelt. Okay. Let me go ahead and read it since we talked
sure.
about it.
Yeah.
It says,
yeah.
The Man in the Arena. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could not have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who, at the best, knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who, at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. I get chills when I read that.
Oh,
that is awesome. And it's even better when my brother-in-law recites it off memory. I love that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not even going to attempt to read if, but I will put a link to Jocko, you know, famously read it in one of his podcasts. And I think that's where I started to revisit it because I like I said, dabbled off and on reading some of Kipling's shorter works and poems. But, it seems like there was an era. I mean, there's various eras, but, around between World War I and World War II and then, other little chunks of time where a lot of it has to do with the topic we're talking about. If there's adversity in the world and some of these folks were, you know, children or young adults in the Great Depression, in the wars or in between war period, it really, steals the person, I think. And you can either stand up to it or fold, and that's kind of what that poem says also. So,
and I think that's kind of what I was echoing when I started this topic, this Winston Churchill theme. These sort of themes mirror each other. They're saying the same thing. It's not a failure if you go out, you go down swinging, so to speak. We're all going to have wins and losses and things that we do, and some of us are going to lose more, and some may win more. But why do we fuss over that? It's, get hung on that, because a lot of people do that. They get stuck in a I'm down, I've always been down. I've got, everything's against me. And we spend all this energy and time struggling, like grading ourselves or on some kind of scale, weighing our worth as if it's some kind of arbitrary outcome. You know what I'm saying? I don't think there's really any reason to do that. I guess as I guess what I'm kind of trying to pick out of that.
Yeah, and I think one of the first things I was considering with this topic is perception, right? It's how we see and understand an event or what's occurring around us, and how we decide what those events will mean. And a lot of times we put too much weight on some things and not enough weight on others. So perception can be a powerful thing because it can be a source of strength if you take it in stride, or it can be a source of weakness if you take it the wrong way. So if we're emotional and subjective, we might add to our troubles. But if we see it the other way, we can kind of do the opposite and prevent ourselves from becoming overwhelmed, put it in its proper context, and move on from it.
This is going way off in the weeds, but I think I always want to, I've said this before, when I do these shows with you, I always try to have somebody in my head that I'm thinking about, or somebody that I was trying to help as if I'm talking directly to them.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've heard people say that sounds like this, people get emotional, like I failed and I,
yeah.
So, it's like, I get this negative, emotion about that. And I was listening to a podcast with a fairly prominent psychologist, and he was talking about, we are not our emotions. And I guess the Stoics would say that too. We are not our emotions. The emotions are to be examined and learned from, but they're not who we are. So, okay, I'm down, or I feel down or dejected or depressed because of a failure. Well, that's not who I am. And sometimes people they blur those, and they start to realize, oh, because I had a failure, I'm a failure. No, you're not. That's just, one more way not to do something typically.
And I think that to use a sports analogy, one of the things that comes to mind is if you play like a high profile position in football, they always talk about like if you're a quarterback and you throw an interception, the best thing is to have a short memory, or if you're a, you know, a defensive back and you get burned, you know, you just have to kind of get back in the saddle and say, okay, well, just because I got burned one time, you know, doesn't, you know, define how this game is going to be or how this person's going to beat me. So I think, you know, whether it's sports or, you know, things in life, it's the same thing. It's like you got to have a short memory sometimes, because if not, it'll eat away at you. That's, you know, that's speaking to what you're saying. I mean, we can't let our emotions define who we are. You know, we just got to, you know, dust ourselves off and move on.
You know, I'd like to maybe have Sebastian Giraldo back on one of these days, our you know, PhD in sports development. One of the things I've noticed coaching athletes, sometimes they'll get negative. Let's say they're doing a drill and they come up short. You know, they screw the drill up, or they don't quite have the skill set, you know, fully honed in, so they mess it up, right? Mm-hmm. Some of the athletes will get emotional about that. They'll sort of like, I can't believe I did that again. And what's interesting, and I know I've seen Sebastian do this, and I've picked up on it with when I'm trying to help others, is like focus on the process instead. What part of that, like let's say you're learning a dribble or a certain new, you know, soccer move or something where you're trying to, pass an opponent with a special move. Well, you have to break that maneuver down into small pieces. And so instead of like looking internally at yourself, like there's something wrong with me because I can't do that. Instead, what part of that did I miss? How do you dice that up? I think that can be, you know, gosh, any field. I'm using soccer just because it's close to me, but anything you're working on, if you can kind of look at that, and instead of like looking at yourself like there's something wrong with you because you didn't do it right or you messed it up, look at the process. What's your process? How did you get through there?
Absolutely. I was going to say there's a ton of power in that. And there's a recent documentary about the New England Patriots from a few years ago where, they were underdogs in a way. If a team that's that successful is underdogs, but they really didn't have, you know, a flashy offense. Their defense wasn't great, but they ended up winning the Super Bowl. And it was that famous line from Belichick, you know, do your job. Right. And that's the same kind of thing. And him and Nick Saban are really good friends. And there was like an off-season documentary about them. And you know, Saban is kind of he's almost like a serial killer, you know, personality. And he has an interesting background, you know, West Virginia, you know, a kid coming from a coal mining town. And, you know, he's really big on the process, you know, focus on the task at hand, regardless of what happens before or after that. If you do your job or focus on the process, then, you know, you don't necessarily worry or concern yourself as much as with the result, right? It's like, right. I had a really good boss, and he said, you know, do you want to be a game on the field watcher or a scoreboard watcher? Right. And so it's the same kind of thing. And, and the job I have now in the military, it's very process oriented where, you can't always control the outcome because there's, you know, an undefined number of variables that pop up to include, you know, commercial industry supporting you. But if you know and can, like you were saying, break down the components that make a quality product or process, then you're like, okay, well, if I can, same thing like with your life or with bad things, like I can control only my perception of things, good or bad, and I can control my actions, but I can't control the results. I can't control other people. And I think that's where, honestly, people, have a hard time and break down because, say if you give somebody a compliment and they take it for some reason the wrong way, I explain stuff like that to my kids all the time when they're, you know, dealing or even like coworkers and, you know, subordinates. I'm like, hey, you know, all you can control is what your intentions were. You know, if your intentions were good, right intentions, and, you know, the Stoics talk about right action, then, you know, kind of to hell with everything else. I mean, to a certain extent, because, you know, you can't control these other variables.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, yeah, and I'm sure in the military, you have tons of experience seeing this play out where things don't work out like you thought, but, you know, you just have to have the right attitude to move forward and do the next best choice, you know, make the next best decision you can.
Yeah, I mean, a couple weeks ago when I was doing one of my leadership topics, I talked about bearing as a, you know, a character trait. And I grew up seeing my dad conduct himself that way, but I never could define what it was. And so I found it fascinating in my first, you know, month in the Marine Corps, where I was like, oh, that's actually something they try to teach, you know, is even if you're freaking out inside your head and there's explosions and, you know, people are getting, you know, shot at or killed, you have to, if you're in charge, you, even if you feel like everybody else is, you have to be, you know, somebody has to maintain their bearing and, you know, be composed even when, you know, the knee-jerk reaction is to not be composed. So that's a probably an extreme example, but it's the same thing. It's like you're not reacting emotionally. You're focusing on the process and what you can control and going kind of moment to moment, you know, which is sometimes all we can do.
Yeah. I love that example. I'm trying to think what else I got on this. It looks, you know, I just bottom line is for those that listen to us and that are kind of trying to grow, we're all learning, growing, and evolving. Everyone is going to suffer at some point, and sometimes that's when some of the best growth occurs. I've seen that in my own life. I've seen that in that of the people I interact with and my patients. And, you know, I think take a little bit from what Winston Churchill said, you know, success is just going from one failure to another and staying enthusiastic. It's not something, just because something is a setback doesn't mean it has to stop you. And there's, God, we could go through so many examples of, you know, famous people, you know, engineers and, you know, doctors that have made huge discoveries and, you know, there's so many examples of people that kind of went through all kinds of challenges and setbacks and business and development and only to come through in the end and have the ultimate, you know, the ultimate win or whatever that, you know, defined them. And I think in the end, everybody has to just do the best they can every day and make the most of every moment. And I think that Winston Churchill talks about being courageous is what he's talking about. You know, you have to be courageous and just say, hey, I'm just going to go to the next challenge and keep going, keep swinging and see where that ends up.
Yeah. I mean, the book I mentioned earlier, you know, I would encourage people to look it up. Obstacle is the Way. I know it helped me through a pretty dark time when I was, you know, juggling, you know, kids and my wife getting breast cancer treatment and I had a big job. It was high visibility, and it really talked about how you can harness the power of those life-changing events, and it gives like some just incredible historical examples. One of them talks about Abraham Lincoln, and you know, it appears that he dealt with a lot of, you know, depression and adversity in his life, but one of the things that he had was an unbreakable will, and really that can be a strength in and of itself if you kind of refuse to let circumstances dictate. And you think about it, a president presiding over a country that was trying to tear itself apart, and one of his, like, you know, just mantras and what he was known for is just saying, "This too shall pass." And you think about, you know, how simple that is, but in the situations he was dealing with, it's pretty powerful, you know.
Incredible. Well, anything else exciting going on for you nowadays? I think we've probably beat that topic up. Failures equal success. Anything else you got cooking?
No, always something cooking. You know, it's kind of funny that I just mentioned Lincoln because we're traveling to Gettysburg this weekend to go to a wrestling tournament. And so we're actually going to stay an extra day. And I've been there for battlefield studies, and it's a pretty incredible place if people haven't been there. I think it has one of the most extensive series of monuments in any national park or national battlefield. It's and there's, like, you know, obviously it was a major battle for the North and the South and one of the turning points in the war. And I mean, there's like all these different like little significant things, like you can tell by if the horse has its foot off the ground or whether it's down, whether that person was killed in battle, and there's all these like little and you can rewalk some of the ground where Pickett's charge, which was kind of a brave but stupid thing that the South
like
did.
It's like an uphill run or something.
I mean, I remember being in a resident military school, and they kind of made us walk that ground. And, you know, at first you scratch your head. You're like, why are we studying Civil War battles? But there was a lot of, tactical, operational, and strategic things that were done, and just like getting a lay of the land. And really, that was an interesting clash of you had kind of Napoleonic era tactics, but then you had improved weapons. And so when those things come together, you just have it's like carnage ensues, right?
Yeah.
And so they were making good examples of like, hey, you never know until there's carnage that like, oh shit, what we were doing and planning for with the last conflict, doesn't coincide with these modern weapons. So it's we're looking forward to going to check that out as a family.
Yeah. I was finishing a book. I think I talked about it in one of our previous episodes about Black Elk, this medicine man from the Dakota Sioux Indians. And, there's a big part in there where, of course, the Indians are always getting wiped out, when the soldiers come through, and now they got Gatlin guns and all kinds of stuff. But, the military, the Army, U.S. Army has Gatlin guns, and the Indians are running around with what they think are magical shirts that are going to protect them. A bullet can't stop them because they got a magical shirt on. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, talk about a clash of clash of cultures there for sure.
Oh geez, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the last thing that I was making notes of, it kind of simplified the whole topic. I think it came from Ryan Holiday, who actually wrote that book, Obstacles Away. In typical Stoic fashion, three short sentences, I think, culminate what we're talking about is, see things for what they are, do what we can, and endure and bear what we must. And, if we can, those are simple phrases, but a lot to unpack there. But if you think about it, it's all we can do. Don't read too much into it. Take things at face value. Come up with a process, and sometimes you just have to grin and bear it, but a lot of times that'll make you better on the other side.
Absolutely. Love it, Chris. I guess let's end it there, and I'll see you next week.
Sounds good.